Hey, shalom, shalom. It's been a while. Sorry if you caught that little glitch in the beginning. I'm not sure if we are live on Instagram. I did all the things correctly. Doesn't look like it's showing up, but whatever. It's okay. They can come over here. Thank you, everybody, for coming to my program. This is, this has been a while since I think I've done a live stream. And it would only take someone like our guest today to help me kick it back into the swing. A cosmic cathedral has been laid upon me, in which I am now deeply concerned with the stars. And to help me sort out this doomsayer madness that I have webbed above me is my good friend, rhythm maker, drum smith, brilliant mage, and astro, what did we say? What was your title?
Celestial witness,
Leo Nelson of Transplutonic. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing well, Keith. How are you tonight, man?
I'm good. It's, as you can see, a little rusty. I'm trying to get back into it. And thanks to the counsel of yourself, people like Derek Hunter, friends like Sam Shadows in the chat, it's been a hard road this month due to injury, and we'll get through all of that because apparently it was written in the stars. But I'm coming out the other side and excited to get back into this rhythm, and feel kind of itching and yearning to learn. And you came, well, what's funny is you came across one of my videos randomly, right? Is how we kind of got connected.
Yeah, Keith, I don't know how it was. I think I was looking up actually Carl Abrahamson interviews, and I think I found the Talismanic one you did. And I was like, oh, this channel's cool, but I have no idea what this guy's doing. So I was like, it's cool, but I'll subscribe. And that's pretty much all I did at that moment. And then it came up in the algorithm right when you were promoting the DMG pretty much. And I was like, oh, what, he's putting out a book? And then I just got interested and I started commenting and chatting with you. So that's kind of how it started.
Well, what's funny is because, you know, there are these symphonies of, you know, like webs and synchronicities and stuff. And what was hilarious is when you told me that story after we had been talking, the comment that you made on that video stayed with me. Like, I remember it pretty clearly, and it was something akin to, I don't know what the hell's going on here, but I like it, keep doing it. And right. And from then on, it's just one of these things in this weird digital age where, you know, you'll rub elbows with people and there's so much information and media and creativeness. But I remember, I don't think it was part and parcel of that comment or following you because of that, but I had been following your page, Transplutonic Drums, and you post these amazing drum sessions that are very like metaphysically, magically tinged. And two of my favorite things in the world are, you know, rhythm and magic. So, how did you get started with that? Because you are, you're like so adept at it. You've got a great space. You film these videos. You teach. Like, where's that come from?
Well, I started playing drums when I was like 12, 13 years old. I'm 32 now. And it was basic story, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to give too much of that history. That's kind of not important. But what's important is that I stuck with it for 20 years. And through that, through the last 12 years, which is another transit in astrology we'll talk about later, I became more and more metaphysically minded while at the same time I was getting better and better at playing. You know, like I'm proud of what I can do on drums, but there are so many people who just blow me out of the water on Instagram. So it's like, I'm not that good. But what I'm good with is combining the creative elements, which is like something you do, which I respect and resonated with when I saw Pragmagic. Was like, oh, we both are trying to create and weave in the magical element in multiple different ways. So that's what I like to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, it shot out at me too, because, you know, there's a tundra dime a dozen people of more like talent, more like focused in the theoretical kind of space. But what jumped out with me is you are, though, although you're like, you know, practiced and minded of all of that, you have a very unconventional kind of syncopation about you. And that always perks up my ear. That's like the first thing that kind of, you know, brings me to any kind of art form that I like, especially within the musical field, is I can hear an arrhythmia of sorts, but it's an arrhythmia that's in concert with itself. You know, it's like, it's not, wild and loose for the sake of being wild and loose. Like, there really is like an intention and a kind of beauty. And once you kind of find that step with it, it all makes sense and it puzzles well. And I feel that's probably a great way to tie into like your background in astrology, because after we met and we started talking and you became part of the Divergent Magic group, which is a monthly group I host for folks looking to share how they're using the Divergent Magic Grimoire, you know, like what we can do to better it for the next edition. You had brought up or inspired at least an integration of like a astro schema with it. And after talking with you, I was like, holy shit, this guy knows his shit. And longtime listeners will know my harumps with astrology, typically Western astrology. And that's largely because my birth time, my exact birth time is unknown. So it's always been kind of this punch and dance with it. Yeah. And it's just, it's one of those things where this mosaic started happening where, you know, we started talking through the Divergent Magic stuff, kind of inspired this and that, but also at a time in my life where I started really kind of attuning to like a metaphysical choreography of sorts, where in the Divergent Magic Grimoire, like a lot of it was how I choreograph a ritual. And I noticed after putting it out, I was like, I didn't give a proper space for astral correspondences or like how right. Someone learn, you know, to dance with those kind of celestial things. And you've shed a ton of light on that for me. And I'm excited to like dig deep into, you know, a ton of aspects. But before we get there, yeah, like what brought you to kind of the astrology prism?
My Saturn return. Are you familiar with the concept of Saturn return? Yeah. Yeah. So go ahead.
Oh yeah. I was just saying from 27 to 29, typically.
Yeah. So it's usually a massive turning point for people in their lives where something happens. It depends on when you're born and when the previous Saturn cycle was, you know, it's when Saturn comes back around to where it was when you were born, but it's not just the degree. That's like when it perfects, but when it's in that sign, you're going to start noticing it, and it's going to last the duration of when it's in that sign, basically, or that house. Mm-hmm. So my life got destroyed. My life got upended and got completely, I almost died. Let's put it that way. I almost didn't exist anymore, which is kind of a scary thing. And it really brings you to the edge. And all the Saturnian themes of death, time, just the ephemeralness of everything, the ephemerality, I guess that's the word, sure, is pressed in on you so hard. You're pressed from every angle. Every single thing that you think you know about life is tested, especially in the specific areas of life that house covers through the flavor and the lens of the zodiac sign that house is in. So for me, it was an Aquarius, and that happened March 21st, 2020, which we all know what happened then as well. Mm. And that was my Saturn return was the world's Saturn return, because we all went into COVID and lockdown. And it, you know, without making it too long of a story, man, I got really sick on a mineral drink that I had made for myself, trying to be healthy, but not knowing the dosage. And it ruined my digestive tract. And at the same time, I believe I had an ulcer on the nerve. So whenever I would flush my stomach with acid, dude, I went into like a psychedelic state of terror and like suicidal depression, basically.
Yeah, like so transcendental pain.
It was beyond understanding. So I somehow without health insurance healed myself. You know, that's one of my proudest achievements, is that I did this for myself. But coming through that journey, I started to remember, oh yeah, Saturn return. This is what this is. And luckily, my roommate, who's a really dear friend of mine, who was in my band for a long time, Devin, he also was having his Saturn return at that same time. And we lived together, we got a house together, and he was having a whole other set of issues at exactly the same time that correspond with his house that Saturn's in. And we both just started studying astrology. We both just were like, we're both metaphysically minded. So we were both like, you know what? We need to figure out what's going on with this. We were driven. So after 2 years of studying, this was in 2022, was when I really got sick. My Saturn return started in 2020. 22 was when I really got sick in January. So from that point on, I've been studying for a couple of years, and I've been, you know, all the big stuff, astrology podcast, all those different things, multiple books, just constant hours of podcasts in my ear, constant reading of books and things like that. So that's pretty much how I've studied.
Okay. So is that, so it came from a place, I mean, obviously when you say metaphysically minded, and what drew you to astrology was there was something happening to like the tapestry of the shared somatic reality during that year. So I understand why the impetus would be, it's not necessarily just the need to look inner, but it was like something that not only can look inner, but can touch, you know, what is affecting everybody as well and everybody's transits. And yeah, right. I guess astrology kind of hits all those marks. And I guess, yeah, the Saturn return, because of its length, is about 2.5 years, right? Like it's, yep. Everyone thinks it's like a certain year or age, but really it's like an era of self. I swear I had mine for my entire 20s, you know? but yeah, it's funny though. And we always kind of come back to this delineation of, you know, what drives these passions to kind of look into these, I don't know, esoteric ideas. And a large through line is that it comes from desperation. It comes from like a desperate state of being, you know? And so when you're talking about those pains, it's like, there's nothing on this earth that can soothe this. Like, I need to figure out what's going on. But to that, I ask, is knowing, is studying it, was that healing in some way? Like, what's the aspect of astrology that allowed you to kind of pragmatically maybe utilize it to help soothe those kind of, you know, heavy bouts that we were all going through, but you especially?
Knowing that it was fated and that it was going to end. Knowing that it was going to end, and it did predictably right when it was supposed to end. You know, there's always carryover. There's not an immediate wall where everything stops, because life's not like that. But the pressure, it's like I was telling you and Derek in one of our previous chats, it comes in through the back. Like this, I think astrology is the ultimate primer for all occult sciences, because it shows you, and you and I might differ on this. I know you kind of have more of a psychological approach to magic a lot of the time. So, you know, like, I don't know much about you, so I'm not going to make, not going to make presumptions, but from what I listen to from you, I hear a lot of the psychological stuff for me, and that works. It comes in, it shows you what the occult really is to me. It shows you that these are forces that are at work, that are happening in your life day to day, but are not as easily perceptible as everything else. Sometimes they're right in your face. Saturn return, right in your face. If I didn't have a model for that, if I didn't know Saturn return was happening, I would think, oh my God, I just have the worst luck. Why is this happening now? Why is this happening at this time? But as you dig in, you start to realize, and you start to make the correlations too. They're not just random. There aren't people just making up random, you know, like Saturn return, like it's a happy time. Like clearly it wasn't, and it happened at the same time for both of us. So I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah, it does, because I knew it was going to end, and that's what kind of gave me solace in knowing that. I, like, you know, I was able to predict the end of that time period of suffering, and then I was able to plan ahead to see, okay, I'll get some relief at this point. I need to start planning for that next round and what that's going to be like.
Yeah. I'll quickly say that if I come off as more psychologically minded, that's just because I found a thoroughfare in which to kind of explain things at the, you know, no most base level. But
sure,
I have never not ruled out my, you know, transitory experiences as just being psychical or, you know, psychological.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm not trying to make assumptions.
Oh, no. That's fine. I just, you know, there was a good moment for me to kind of declare that. And if anything, in the past year's worth of work and insight has made me a bit more of a Looney Tune. So, but I love what you said there. There was one thing I picked up on that really spoke to me was it was faded. And what I find interesting about astrology, and you come across this a lot through even Vedic or sidereal, you know, any kind of sect of astrology, is that these are kind of machinations that happen on autopilot. But you, as the person that, you know, is walking through these machinations, do have the choice to kind of, you know, tarry away from these avenues. But what you brought up when you said it was faded made me think that when we're looking at astrology as a whole, or like as, you know, looking at the sky for everybody in this shared somatic reality, it's almost like it is faded for the group, but leaving will for the individual in a sense. Does that make? Because the, you know, how do I put it? I want to move away from pandemic, but I guess that's, yeah, the pandemic happened to all of us, but how we dealt with that was individually, right?
Yeah,
so correct. It's almost like in the stars you can kind of foretell something happening to the greater whole, but you know, astrology can maybe help. I don't know. I'm always kind of interested in, is there, do you think, an absolute kind of idea when it comes to fate and written in the stars and all that?
It's a good question to ask. It's a good question to ponder. Devin and I, my roommate, have talked about what is free will. Is it real? Because as you get more and more into astrology and you get into the finer points, the finer detailed, you know, like pointillism kind of like aspects of it, there are timing techniques to get things down to the exact minute. And to me, that's just insane. That's too precise that, I mean, if you can do that, that's great, but I just feel like that would fail way more often. And the whole idea is to, it's a tool of prediction, but it's also, you know, a good tool to look back at your life. And that's kind of how you learn. But in terms of fate, I would say you could take two routes. I say the stars incline, they don't compel. But you could also take like Cecco Discoli, who was, you know, a 13th century astrologer in, you know, Italy, who thought he could, who declared that he could not only tell what you were thinking, but what items you had on you based on your chart and the current stars in the sky. So he was a fatalist. He taught fatalism in that way. Yeah. I'm not necessarily a fatalist. I think that the influences were fated. Like those influences were gonna happen, but how I chose to deal with it and respond is up to me. I believe in free will. That's just me. I could be wrong, but.
Right. It's also the paradox of you telling me, I mean, this has always been the thing with me, right? In astrology, was that there's always room for it to be wrong because of that one crux of not knowing the birth time. So that in a sense never made me like think it was fated, or if it told me I was something, I would rebel against that because that's like my nature. Right. So in a way it's like, just knowing or being privy to the fates could drive someone away from that fate, even if it's a good one, or even if, you know, so like, yeah, I guess it depends on where the incited kind of will is constructed. And to bring it back to, you know, I find this really wonderful that like during all this harsh time, what gave you kind of release or like some, you know, kind of solemn ponderance about the weight of the world was just looking to the stars and knowing that this thing that was affecting us all was going to end, you know?
Yeah.
What's interesting for me and the big topic I wanted to talk to you tonight about is you had remarked to me once that we forget that astrology is supposed to be a divinatory tool, you know? I think in the world of pop culture and pop astrology and, you know, all of this stuff, we're using it as like a psychological maxim. It's using it as a tool to kind of like help us find the language of how to compartmentalize, or, you know, whether it's confirmation bias or, you know, whatever. But I think true astrology, and you're right about this, is like there is an arithmetic to it to kind of portend things. And where do we start unpacking that? Like, where do we start unpacking the kind of applications of divinatory astrology?
You have to learn astrology first, obviously. Like, that's going to be a whole process in itself. If you're lucky like me, you'll have a roommate who's as obsessed and as of a much of a nerd as you, and will help you on that journey. But I mean, beyond the basic learning of it, actually being able to divine is going to be able to, you know, you're going to have some experience. You're going to, like me, like I was the beauty. And this is what I think too. I think the older you are, when you get into astrology, the better you are, because you aren't front loaded with these experiences early in life. So I was able to look back at my life and the transits of those times and go, you know, you could say it's confirmation bias, but like the exact influences and the exact type of and flavoring of those influences at my life and the planets and what they meant at that time. It's very hard to convince me, and I'm not very easily convincible, that, in my opinion, that it's confirmation bias, you know, because I wasn't front loaded, you know what I mean? Like those things were happening in my life. I didn't know what Saturn meant in astrology. I didn't know that it was exalted in Libra. I didn't know any of that stuff, mm-hmm. you know? So like, if you're not front loaded, it's a lot easier to look back. And then once you've looked back and you can verify for yourself kind of its validity, you're like, okay, all right. Yeah. There's no way that that's chance. Then mm-hmm. you can start to look forward and project forward and see, okay, this is coming up for me. This kind of transit's about to happen. That you can't predict events usually. I mean, unless you're some sort of, you know, master, adept, you know, like what are they, the hidden masters. But you'll be able to kind of get like, okay, this is the flavor. This is the color. This is the kind of overall taste of what this transit's going to be like. So I kind of have an idea.
Sure. And I guess, you know, I'm kind of, this is kind of like my wilderness survival background, or, you know, kind of any background, beaten up, in my youth, you know, just by the elements of self and the outside. But it's almost like, it's a weather chart, right? It's a weather forecast. Yep. So it's more of, provincial in the sense that, you know, during this time, because of this transit, I should batten down the hatches and different, you know, elements of my life. Right. What I'm trying to get to for the divinatory aspect is, to me, there's always something about the word divination, and it's probably just my goof juice brain always, but I always have this mental image of like a God flick spark on something, you know, kind of divinatory. So there's always already a conceit of like creation. There's already a conceit of action when it comes to divinatory. Okay. So like, it could be like the communion with the other to help you create or will something, right? To flick your brain, you know, or your ghost into doing something. Like, is there an element of astrology that you can kind of utilize to help create or construct like a thoroughfare, like to something that you're trying to, you know, ordain with your will? Like,
you mean like a specific technique, or do you mean just like a mindset?
Yeah. If you know of techniques or different kind of schools of thought. And I do want to make mention to anyone watching too, I think we're largely, when we're speaking astrology, we're talking about it typically in the Western tradition. I know, you know, to bring up, I did study Vedic for a long time, and it is hilarious in Vedic astrology, because they're like that. They get down to the nitty gritty, like every year.
You can, well, that's where it came from. You know what I mean? It came over You know, like if you look at old, I'm obsessed with Renaissance Italy. It's one of my favorite passions in the world to study. I love it. And if you look at the charts from back then, they look like Vedic charts. They weren't round, they were square with the triangles. So it's like that's where it came from. So yeah, Vedic is amazing stuff too. But either way, these principles, that's just a human map. The principles are the same, you know? So I think if we're going to talk about how to divine with it, you know, look at the outer planets. Look at Saturn. Saturn is the one that's going to come in and is going to constrict you. Saturn's going to come in and really, if I could say this, fuck things up. It really is. And it's not going to be in the way you think necessarily. It's going to start constricting you and you're going to feel like you have nowhere to run in certain areas. You're going to feel like it's going to test you. It's a pressure test. Did you do the work you needed to do? And if you did, it's not going to be that bad. Some people be like, I had a Saturn return or I had a Saturn transit. I didn't really even notice anything. It's like, cool, you had your shit together in that area, I guess. I did not. I was rocked and wrecked completely during mine. So I would say start with a planet like Saturn. Saturn, and when Devin, my roommate, he does his astrology readings, which he does for his little basic clients. He will look at Saturn in the chart too, pretty much as like the beginning. And you track that around because that's where you're going to see a lot of your massive changes in life. And then also Jupiter transits, because that's the other one. You know, we could talk about Neptune, we could talk about Uranus, we can talk about Pluto. Those are all important. But if we're just going to talk about how I would look at a chart initially, I go, where the hell is Saturn? I go, where is Saturn? What is Saturn doing? And where is it going to be? So those are kind of the techniques. Look at the two big planets, because they're also kind of opposites. Saturn's the constricting, Jupiter, Jove is the expanding. So they fight against each other. And if you notice, Saturn's further out and Jupiter's closer in. So the expansive force is keeping the constricting force from completely constricting everything. So it's perfect balance. So those are the ones I would look at first in your chart and then kind of plan from there because they're going to be the longer term transits.
Yeah, I mean, that makes absolute sense. I mean, your Saturn return, if you're lucky, happens again in your late 50s, you know? It's and
Oh,
if you're
yeah.
super lucky to survive two Saturn returns, it'll happen in your late 80s.
Yeah, I'm trying to fight Saturn a third time. You know what I'm saying? This is number one.
Yeah, so what's funny too, I think in my chart right now, Saturn has returned, but not, it's like in the exact places where it was when I was born or something weird.
Is that,
I was
is you,
reading somewhere, it's conjunct, you know, where
yeah,
it
hold on,
was when
yeah.
I was born right now.
Yeah, I gotta look at your chart, but yeah.
Which we can jump into. We did bring some visual aids to kind of go through stuff, and I do, yeah, I am again, you know, I'm really fighting the urge to get really deep into the weeds about these like really kind of anarchic sensibilities of and wonderment of astrology, but I think it's good to really kind of come back to the pragmatic aspects, and to like it is a very helpful tool, whether it's psychological, whether it's, you know, ghosts breathing in your ear. It doesn't matter, like this stuff does help
Right.
kind of
Totally.
correlate, you know. And I think you know, another big topic, and I'll write it down to come back to, is people such as myself or perhaps you, I'm not sure, and I don't want to you know, presume, but people with maybe you know, mental disfluencies or kind of internal weather that is more chaotic and less temperate than, say, neurotypical weather, and how that kind of conflates and contracts, you know, with these readings. And but yeah,
Sure.
I'll make note of that to come back to that. But
Cool.
first, let's check out. Let's see. So I think this first one is yours, yeah?
I'm not sure. You have to show it to me which one you got up.
Let's see. Yeah, it's yours.
Yeah, so that's my chart. So anybody who's astrologically savvy can look at that and you see me. So
Here,
there
we'll
I
do
am.
this.
Well, welcome to me.
Yeah. So I can share with people. I did have to let's see, stop screen. I did have to kind of guesstimate. I worked with my friend Jilly to utilize clues from my birth parents as to what times I could have been born on my birthday. And we kind of just decided on one. And I was like, I'm going to keep it for a year and work through all this stuff. And there's that famous app called CoStar where people can, you know, log on and see your chart and see how you guys kind of correlate. It's fun. It's goofy. It can be helpful in some aspects. So there is that too as a learning tool, which I can bring up later. But I think here we go. All right, this is a little clearer.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's as big as I can get with what you sent me.
It'll look bigger on a regular screen, and plus I have it right here next to me, so I can, you know, we can talk about it if you want. I don't know exactly, I'm not sure exactly what you want to point out here, but let me know what you want to do.
Yeah, so let's stay on the topic of Saturn since it is such a raucous kind of transit, right? And okay. Such a raucous entity. I mean,
totally.
You know, in magical practices that I've done, especially in like planetary correspondences that I've added to, the Saturn ones have always had a bit more seriousness or like pageantry, like you know what I mean, like very dramatic.
Yes, you could say that for sure.
Yeah
so I mean, looking at my chart, you can see that my Saturn is towards the bottom left in the little yellow section, the Aquarius section, and it's at 0 degrees 42 arc minutes, and it's retrograde, so that means it's in the first degree. And that means my Saturn return happened basically right as, you know, COVID happened. Like the second it came in, it was basically rocking my Saturn. It was hitting my natal Saturn. So, but that wasn't when things got the worst for me. It was years later, well, towards the end of the transit, that I got really destroyed. Actually, it's not on that chart I have, but my part of fortune, which is a calculated Arabic lot, which is a whole technique. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I'm sure some astrologers or, you know, astrologically savvy people are.
Repeat that. The
lot of the lot of fortune. So you can calculate lots, like where points on your chart where certain things are known to happen. Like they're a little bit more unreliable. They're not my favorite thing. But yeah. What I will say this much: the day I got sick and had my, like, almost dying, had to take charcoal so I could breathe and all kinds of shit, Saturn was on top of my part of fortune, just right on top of it. So and a lot of fortune is like fated events. So take that for what it's worth. You know?
Okay. So yeah, good or bad, just, you know, life changing.
Yeah. Yeah. But Saturn's the great malefic. So I had the greatest, you know, the bad guy on top of my, you know, point of fortune. So of course I was like, on death's door. It makes a lot of sense. Plus there were other things that day that, you know, anybody wants to talk to me, I can explain it to them. But long story short, that's where that is. If you look at my Jupiter, now if we go up to the top right corner in the Leo section, the red section in the upper right corner, you'll see that my Leo is conjunct by Mercury. They're next to each other, in the basically the last degree of Leo there. So to me, I feel like that's the thing that's my eighth house. So I feel like that's the thing that not only gives me a lot of ability to study and be intellectually interested in the occult because it's eighth house stuff, but also the thing that probably saved my life because I was able to figure out what I needed to do to heal. And that's the thing too, when Jupiter's in the eighth house, I've read this a lot, and it's in Vedic stuff too, in the Vedic texts. Or the Vedic, you know, astrology, just in general, their interpretations, that if you have Jupiter in the eighth and you have life-threatening events, you'll probably come out relatively unscathed and you won't die from them. So, hail Jove. That's awesome.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, those are the two big ones that I said you should look at when you're trying to figure things out. So know your natal chart and know how they're going to flow over the top of where your, you know, your points are. If one more, I would like to say that's the most important one to me, and, you know, directly kind of corresponds with me knowing you and stuff like that, is if you look at the top left corner, you're going to see Scorpio, and you're going to see my midheaven is pretty much directly conjunct Pluto.
Yeah.
Pluto's powerful in Scorpio because they're very similar in energies. And it's right on my midheaven, and it's in my 11th house of groups, networks, you know, business friends, stuff like that. So I'm going to have, you know, I think that looks like I'm going to have a circle of magicians around me. You know what I mean? So I love that.
Yeah. My Pluto's in Scorpio as well.
Yeah. We're the Pluto and Scorpio generation. It takes like 15 years or 20 something years for it to move.
What's funny, it's in my fourth house, which is like family oriented.
Yeah. It's deep transformation, deep, you know, it can be a lot of things, man. It's not always pleasant. That's the thing.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I brought this up. I did want to make mention, we both have a little bit of a universal hexagram thing going on in our charts right now. Which is
no shit, dude. That's cool.
Which is neat. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Oh yeah, I see that. I can even see a pentagram too. That's sick.
Yeah. So what I have here, and I want to share this with folks. This is CoStar, and I'm only sharing this just because it's easier to see.
Yeah.
Really. It's good. You know, there's Cafe Astrology, there's all the famous ones that everybody knows. I like this one. You can change it between three systems, whole sign, you know, Placidus or whatever, and another one. And but it's really easy and not as how do I put it? Not as I don't know how to put it. The construction of Cafe Astrology is very annoying to get around.
Yeah.
This one's a little easier to change things, and you can like, for me especially, who's, you know, had to investigate birth times and go through, you know, signs and sources, like it was super easy just to change the birth time, check out the chart and my house placements and all that. So that's been nice. But if you've noticed, ours are almost the exact opposite of each other, our charts. Mine's like on the right side or whatever, where yours is, you know, up to the left, but we still have those oppositions or whatever.
Yep.
In them, yeah. Pretty close. And I'm sorry, I'm just a very like a visual geometric minded, like but anyways, yeah, so this is kind of what I've been working with. You know, birth time is especially important, you know, for ascendant sign and house placements.
Yep, it lays out the houses. Yep.
What's that?
It lays out the houses.
It lays out the houses, yeah. So that's why it's such a big deal to kind of corner that market. Or if you know it, if you're somebody that was born in a state that prints it on their birth chart, or if your parents remember, then
I got,
you don't need to worry about it.
I got lucky. All my birth stuff is a palindrome. I was born on 9/9, September 9th, in 1991, and then at 4:44 p.m. So it's all the same backwards and forwards. It's pretty cool.
Nice. But yeah, as you can see here, I am very eighth and what was it? Eighth and fifth house. Fifth house, very much creativity and pleasure. Eighth house, very much occult and, you know, taboo. also, you know, they also correlate. There's different aspects to the houses themselves, depending on where they're placed. But, you know, it can be as something as small as like something monetary, like the eighth house also has to do with, you know, generational wealth or getting wealth from others, basically. Or it can have something to do with something as big or ethereal as, you know, being occult minded or interested in, you know, metaphysical constructs and whatnot. So it kind of runs the gamut depending on where it's placed and where you're at. Just trying to look for my Saturn here. I think it's in
Sagittarius. Pisces.
Oh, it's in Sagittarius. That's right. Yep. Interesting. Yeah, which is funny because the Jupiter is the Sagittarian planet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's one of the signs that it rules. Yep.
I have a lot of, I think the one thing why the Western astrology makes sense to me specifically is because of how much contradiction is inlaid in my chart. And it's, you know, contradiction, I think, is like one of the most like specifically beautiful things and, you know, artful kind of human things in the world. It's been an obsession of mine as of late, of, you know, the anti-absolute of understanding the third mind between, you know, two biases and whatnot. And it makes sense because in my chart, my moon's opposite my sun, my, you know what I mean? Like, I've got very much kind of shit all over the place, but I can make decisions.
Yes. So. Well, assuming that that's your correct rising sign, going with that, your moon is conjunct your ascendant. You notice that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Let's talk about conjunction function, conjunction junction. What's your function?
Yeah. Right on. Yeah, it just means that they're touching. They're right there on top of each other. That's what it is. And for you, that might mean that, you know, since I was talking to Devin about this, you know, your ascendant is your identity. You know what I mean? Right. It's the outward facing thing. Like, I'm a Virgo, but I come off more Capricorn on the outside, which is interesting. And for you, normally we have that mask, you know, the persona. For you, it would seem that, like, the moon, since it's your emotional self, it's your intuitive inner self being right there on the front, maybe it's more easy to view. Maybe it comes to the front more often and is not as hidden away sometimes. You know what I mean? Maybe people can see into you and can understand you or see your emotions or all those things maybe a little bit clearer than you think, you know?
Yeah. I'll take it. I also read too somewhere through my struggles with birth time and ascendant signs that, a lot of times you'll grow out of the ascendant sign or even into it, because it's like something that's either kind of learned without outside variables or something that's, you know, it's nature nurture kind of a situation. But a lot of times it's like what it was when you were born, right? And then you kind of, as the variables kind of weigh you down over your life and into your teenage years and stuff, that facade, that ascendant kind of just washes away a bit.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that my ascendant at 0°00 didn't have much to wash away because it was the moon at the same time, you know? It's like,
yeah, let's see which way is it moving, Leo to Cancer. Yeah, I guess it would be, I think it's actually at 29°, but yeah. Or no, is it? Yeah. So,
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things, man. You know, not having your rising sign, I understand why that's frustrating, because I've had the luxury of knowing that to the exact minute. So, like, not knowing that and also understanding that, like, wow, there's something to this, but I can't get a precise reading that I'm sure about. I understand how that can be frustrating. So it seems like you've done pretty well, though. You've worked with people and it seems like you've gotten something going. That's good.
Well, I think I dig that I kind of have a choice to not feel arrested to it, because, like, if you think about all the variables, like, did you actually breach, you know, birth at this time that's written on your birth? They also write down your birth time, like, after you're already born and made sure you're alive. And, you know, depending on how they operate things, there's all these crazy variables that come into it. All these human interactions that log these parts of you that you carry around, you know, thinking are absolutes, you know, this is my birth time, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's so funny to me that, like, how faulty all of those things can be. So it's actually been a really revealing kind of method to kind of try on birth times and kind of see what fits. And what's funny is, like, the Leo rising also works, the Virgo rising also works in some cases.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Some of the house placements work, you know, but I mean, and that's not confirmation bias. That's just, like, you know, I see that this one works a lot less and this one's, like, pretty close, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. I think too, you know, reverse engineering it too, like, not, you know, Divination is important, and I know it's something you are definitely into. By the way, have you ever heard of astrology dice? You ever seen those?
No.
So it's a sign, it's a planet, and then it's a number for the house. It's three different dice, and they're all 12-sided. And then you roll them, and it comes up with like Mars and Aquarius in the first house. And then you can use that as a divinatory tool. I have a set of them. They're pretty interesting.
Oh,
So
yeah.
might want to look into that. I'm sure you can find some cool ones. But I would say reverse engineer things. Like instead of, especially when you're learning in the beginning, like what really happened? What were your real feelings at that time? You'll get a closer read on, the real events, the real, whether it was good or bad, the ups and the highs and the lows. You'll be able to get a real read on what the influences actually were at that time in your life, and not looking at the map is not the territory. So you look at the territory, which is your, psychic and emotional self and your events in your life, and then you kind of go back and you can kind of get a closer read on what the things mean, but also if you feel they're, that they're relevant in that spot, if you're unsure of your birth time, if you're unsure of the house system or any of that stuff,
Yeah, I also want to mention back on the Saturn thing. What's really funny is that Saturn's in my fifth house, but so is Uranus and was it Mars? And like I have all of these planets and the fifth house meaning creativity, ex like expression, passion. It could also be like how do I put like gluttony in a way, or you know what I mean? Like kind of pleasure seeking. And it's just funny to me that after studying this, realizing that like it's the same, it's the pharmacon, right? It's the poison is the antidote for me. And that's like expression. It's both a poison and my like huge motivating factor, right?
You're
And
going to see challenges in that area because of Saturn, but
yeah.
you also have energy. You have your vital essence there, which is Mars. It's also malefic, but it's only because it's such fiery energy that can really mess things up. That's your passion. Your passion is creativity, I would say, at least from an outside point of view, knowing you a little bit, creativity is a huge thing for you. So, and then Uranus being innovative, being chaotic, like that's totally part of your creative process from what I see as well,
Yeah, and I what I like about all of this, it's almost like, and to think of it back into a sort of tabletop role-playing game character construction. Like I also see it as a tool like in writing. If you're writing a story and you're trying to like come up with the attributes of a character, like come up with a chart, like draw, get a blank chart and just draw some, 12 lines hitting walls or whatever. Read that chart and then boom, you've just created this fictional character and you can see all of their attributes. You know what I mean? Like I see like creative, pragmatic, fun applications with while also learning the charts, like learning the houses, like understanding that the Jupiter is the mana, like or the charisma or whatever, however you see it. But I think it's exciting. It's like how I was using tarot, to work through writing blocks and to, even characters in a story that I was working on, like what would they do here? And I would do a tarot spread for them as to like, okay, if they did do this, this is what would happen, sort of a thing. And if you transpose that to astrology and you basically, utilize charts to fill the attributes of a fictional character you're making, it they start to write themselves in a way. And that's kind of both horrifying and beautiful. You know what I mean? It's like you start to see the machinations of how folks would react, how they would incite, But yeah, I think that's fascinating, in the sense of utilizing it for creative purposes. But what we were talking about Saturn. So where's Saturn on mine? That was what we talked about, Sagittarius, and
Yep, fifth
that's
house.
so where is that now?
Saturn now is in Pisces. It's right between your Venus and your Mercury. So it's at 18 degrees. So I looked at it. It's in between. If you go to the top right, look at your sun and all that stuff, you'll see Venus and then you'll see Mercury. Boom, right there. That's where Saturn is right now. So,
okay.
And it's right in between them. So you're going to feel that, dude. You're going to be feeling both of those kind of, you know what I mean? It's getting closer to your Mercury. It's working its way towards Mercury right now.
Yeah. And with, what was Saturn, Sagittarius, Mercury being Pisces, in Pisces. Yeah. It's, I can see that. So when you're looking at charts and relating it to the aspect of where these planets are in the sky right now, there's that term actual sky astrology, a sidereal, right?
Right.
Have you thought about this as kind of a background prism? Like, why use the Western tropical one when it was, you know, created by mapping the sky as it was years and eons ago, right? Where sidereal kind of maps the sky when you were born, the actual sky of where those constellations were and whatnot. Like, do you see kind of the charged kind of totemic thing of this like Western tropical astrology using the same map basically for every birth chart?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure about that, but what I can say is this is the reason it rings true to me is because I don't see the planets as, and nobody knows. First of all, let's just say nobody knows why, what the mechanism is, right? Nobody knows. So I don't think that they're shooting beams at us. That's not what I think. I think they're nodes that are indicative of cycles that are happening and that at that time they mapped the sections of the sky that had these attributes to them that happened no matter where the actual stars are. Those were arbitrary in terms of the actual weather happening, you know, the psychic weather happening on Earth. So that, if you discount the fact that, like, if you take the idea that they're shooting beams or we have to be able to see them, or they're, you know, that's a materialist thing. This is a spiritual thing, you know, like it, you get stuck. I don't know if you know who Christopher Warnock is. You ever check out Christopher Warnock?
Yeah.
Chris, big Chris, man. He's the man. I want to get him. I want to talk to him soon, but he's like, this is all materialist thinking. Like they have to be hitting us with gravity rays, or they have to be visible in the same part of the sky. And that's why they try to, materialists always try to say that, you know, or scientists even, they're just like, well, it's clearly wrong because the stars aren't even where they were and it doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, they were just using that as a temporary map that we made onto where the seasons of the psychic energy were, and that they still apply because that's not arbitrary. Those things were just temporary.
I would argue too that utilizing the map they charted for Western astrology that we use to this day, and not just talking about the magical kind of, you know, charging of that tradition and current over the years for many people and what that might do metaphysically or whatever, but that chart is closer to what the actual sky is today because of how long ago it was in the material world of thinking, right? Because it's light years we're looking at in the past right now. So utilizing the Western chart or the Western map of astrology, we're actually closer to an actual sky now.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, the planets are the things that are having the most effects.
Yeah.
So the stars, those are the background that we use to like make a map, but them moving through them, we just realize, okay, this is hitting those areas. So, you know, that's really how I look at it. And I see the planets as nodes. I don't see them necessarily like, I think we live in a really big, like just gyroscope of influences, you know, and they're just kind of showing us that. And I think that that's awesome because if you can have knowledge of these effects and you're like, okay, so there's actually something physical outside of you that you can be like, you can look to, that's a physical thing that's showing you the inward transformations and the inward effects. Now that takes the whole, I wouldn't say it takes it out of the game completely, but it definitely reduces to a very low level the room for error, and actually the error in terms of confirmation bias. You know what I mean? Because you're looking at something physical and its movements are corresponding to things that are happening. So when you can do it's more empirical. You know what I mean? They were looking and they were saying, okay, every time this red thing moves here, we go to war. That's really interesting. Write that one down. You know, so that's kind of how, after thousands and thousands of years of doing that, we've gathered so much data that shows, and so many experiences. So, I mean, imagine how many millions of people were studied astrology in the past, really, because there was not much to do, you know? So,
yeah,
it's really interesting.
Well, yeah. Those were long days and nights back then. I was going to say, you know, to get back onto this kind of forecasting, I don't need you to do like a, you know, astrological forecast of the year and blah, 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 because those, you know, those could go either way. But has anything popped out at you at the immediate future that will kind of, you know, affect the whole somatic shared reality? Not just yourself, but I'd love to hear that one too. Maybe the micro and the macro of looking ahead to this next year. Are there any transits to kind of bleed out at you as ones to either batten the hatches or the hatchets?
Yeah. So on the batten the hatchets side, Pluto's going to move out of Aquarius, which it's in right now. It's retrograde. It's going to move back into Capricorn, where it's been since 2008. And that's going to be like during the election. So in America, so that's going to be, and that's, Capricorn is the structures. It's the foundation. It's the institutions. So that's what, you know, Pluto's been fucking around with for the last 15 years or whatever. So it's going to go back one last time to finally finish what it started. And then it's going to be in Aquarius for the next 20 years. So, you know, that's a big one. That's something that people don't necessarily think about, Pluto, because it's a lot of different things. It was demoted as a planet. Actually, John Michael Greer wrote a great book on that called Twilight of Pluto, which kind of discusses its waning influence. But that's something you can check out if you're interested in that. Mm-hmm. But that's a big one. I would say also, what's another one that's going to move? Neptune and Saturn are both going to move into Aries at the same time. And they're both going to conjoin at the first degree of Aries, which from what I remember listening to, like, that exact degree and that exact conjunction in that sign hasn't happened for like 6,000 years. So that's the first degree of the zodiac, Aries being the first sign. So that's a big deal. Those are two big planets. And they're opposite energies. And they're opposite energies right now, both in Pisces. So wherever the Pisces thing, you know, wherever Pisces is in your chart, whatever house, for anybody listening to this, like, look at those conflicting energies you're probably having there, because Saturn is swimming in the mystical waters of Pisces, and Neptune's right at home because that's what Neptune is. It's the dissolving of boundaries. And Saturn is hard boundaries. So now you have this fighting happen, this weird, you know, tension. And I know you probably feel that, Keats, with your, you know, what's going on with you lately. So that's definitely happening. And then the other thing I would say, so that's going to happen more so it's gonna go finally in 2026. For the rest of this year, that's going to keep getting closer and closer for the rest of this year, pretty much, as the Saturn and Neptune in Pisces. And then in the beginning of 26, they're going to move in together, but we're getting closer and closer to that. So pay attention was my point there. And the last one was Jupiter just moved into Gemini. It's been in Taurus for the last year. So it just moved into Gemini, and I've been feeling good. It's my sixth house of health, work routines, and all that stuff. I've been feeling way better. So notice that too. That's a big transit. That's a big boy.
Heck yeah. Gemini is both, I think, my midheaven and my Chiron. Which is another contradiction and funny thing about that. So
that's actually how we started talking about astrology, because during the DMG chat, I was like, oh yeah, this eclipse is conjunct Chiron. And you were like, what?
Yeah. The big thing that got me back into it, and I'll give all the credit to good friend Jilly Beans, friend of the show. But she, you know, she helped me kind of assess a lot of this stuff when I had the time and I was working on some of my own anarchic practices, and I wanted to get better with correspondences and how I was doing the ritual choreography and applying it to, you know, music and all this stuff. And, you know, it came down to like, well, let's just choose a chart first and like really go from there. And Jilly really helped me with that. But she, what I love, what she did was she reads a chart, she'll focus on the Chiron, which I thought was really beneficial for me and very revealing, because the Chiron, the wounded warrior, is like, you know, the wounded healer, wounded warrior, is this kind of like walking kind of wound that you're always kind of dealing with. It's kind of like inherent in you. And it just so happens to be my career trajectory, like my purpose is also my Chiron, which is in Gemini, you know, which is all about communication and messaging. And it's like, you know, but and it was just so revealing, because I don't think until basically yesterday I started to realize that I'm tired of just being misunderstood and I'm just not going to overexplain anymore, you know? Like, literally, that revelation happened yesterday after like years of talking about this stuff. But that's the Chiron talking. That's me, you know, with my familial interactions. That's me, not even just kind of inner with, you know, my mental disfluencies. It's this worry about being misunderstood. It's this kind of anger or, short-temperedness, or just kind of utter like disappointment when people don't understand me in some like pivotal way that I find is pivotal, which shouldn't fucking matter. Who cares, right? Like, you shouldn't. I've had to like learn to like not overexplain myself, to wait, hold back, maybe let Mary take the phone. You know, or like maybe let Mary read my reply first, you know, and that's like big and small versions. But that's the Chiron that I've been dealing with. And it just so happens to be within, you know, the creative medium of which like is kind of part of my definite chief aim, if you will, or like my kind of construct or purpose. It happens to be within the same vernacular as my Chiron. So it's like, again, it's this pharmacon. It's like my poison is my antidote, right? My celebration is my funeral, kind of a thing that like I have to kind of trudge along with. And that's all been, honestly, and I don't want to keep using the word pragmatic, and I don't, you know, like there's no pun intended, but that has been super helpful and revealing in a intrinsically kind of self exploratory regard. And a lot of that came from the vernacular of astrology. A lot of that came from somebody saying, hey, focus on this placement. I'd like you to kind of look at this, you know, instead of don't be overshadowed by, you know, all of the other planets yet. Just kind of focus on this one. This seems to be the one that you should mind. And it just gave me a vernacular, gave me a lexicon of which to use to better explain myself. So I'm not misunderstood all the time. No, but you know what I mean? And that's like, it's been a very, I don't want to say therapeutic, but yeah, I guess essentially a therapeutic kind of exercise. And yeah, I think, you know, I know we kind of talked about that, but it was the same with Midhaven. Because you asked me a few questions when we first started talking about astrology, and you mentioned this earlier. You're like, I want to know these placements. Like, what's your midheaven? You know, what's your blah, blah, blah. So could you explain a little bit about the elusive midheaven? Is it midhaven, midheaven?
It's midheaven. It's the middle of the sky when you were born there, basically.
Yeah, so, MC.
MC, yeah. The medium coeli is what it's called. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Like I said, you know, in my studies, like I said, I'm still just a little researcher, studier out here too. You know, I'm not a professional astrologer by any means, but my understanding of it is it has to do with your purpose, you know, like your career and things like that are 10th house things. But right. If we're using whole sign, which is what I'm going with, because I find it to be more accurate, your midheaven doesn't necessarily fall into your 10th house. Mine's in my 11th. It can be in your ninth too, you know, it can be ninth, 10th, 11th. It can go outside of that, but most of the times it doesn't. So that's going to be kind of your, you know, your life's purpose and kind of your direction and what you feel gives you, you know, meaning and stuff. The career and the 10th house stuff is going to give you, what you're known for, your public face, generally. So, I have my 10th house is Libra. It has my Mars and my Moon are conjunct there. Libra is this, the sign of the arts, the sign of beauty and all those things. It's a Venus ruled sign. Well, guess what? I have martial Mars and emotional Moon conjunct in there. That sounds like drumming to me, you know? That also sounds like me getting, and I can relate to what you said before. That also sounds like me getting very quickly pissed off when things are not in balance, which is I go from zero to pissed very quick, and then I teapot out very quick too. I don't stay mad and I don't explode, but I get mad over the littlest details being out of balance, and it's something I have to work on. It's part of my nature, and I got to work on it.
Yeah, I see a few of 10 house or 10th house in mine. It looks like Leo and Gemini, right?
I don't know. Let me check your chart real quick. I'm trying
No,
to see
I'll
it.
have to see it. Yeah, I always forget. Oh, is that Mercury?
Because I'm looking at
No.
the one for for Albuquerque in 86, right? So that's the one I'm looking at. Your midheaven is going to be in Taurus, which by the way,
Course.
Uranus is
Oh no,
your.
you this is the Virgo rising one, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking at Leo rising.
Oh, you are looking at Leo rising. Okay.
Yeah. So your midheaven is at 24 degrees in your 10th house of Taurus. You know what else is at 24 degrees right now in Taurus? Is let me see here real quick. Is oh, look at that. Uranus, planet of chaotic change and explosions and all kinds of stuff. So that's what I was trying to tell you about getting rocked with the career stuff, man. And like your midheaven and just you're feeling your purpose being, swayed back and forth and making these big changes, abrupt changes in this electrifying energy. That makes more than sense to me.
That this is the rub one, because I guess it was the Virgo rising one that had the Gemini in as the midheaven, and that made tons of sense for me, but I'll have to
Gemini
investigate
is midheaven.
Taurus midheaven, because I don't think I have any Taurus anywhere else. Taurus is a very elusive sign to me.
Yeah, well, in this one, if this one, your midheaven's in there, and your Chiron's in your 11th house, groups, public official associations, things like that. I know you know what they are, but yeah, that's pretty much. So that's interesting. So that might be where your wound is at, feeling, I don't know if you seem like you're part of a group, man. So I don't know what that is. Maybe that could be something for, to be said for the Virgo rising chart.
Oh, okay. So this is the Virgo rising chart.
No, what I'm saying is I'm looking, I'm looking at the Leo one, but what I'm saying is since you're not 100% sure, the fact that you resonate more with that might be something to be said positively to sway it towards that.
I'll investigate it, but what you're saying, but I'm not a part of a group. I mean, it's pretty much just Eric Millar and I have partner or I have like friendships or partnerships, but there's nothing ever. I've never been a part of anything that's been like multiple people. I mean, maybe a band, and that didn't work out.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. That would make sense. Chiron in on the 11th, but I mean also, I guess what I mean by group is it seems like you're very somewhat intertwined in those communities. I don't know. Have you? No? Wow. I guess I
I
totally
mean, I have
misinterpreted
a lot
that.
of friends. We the Hollowed, it's an open door. People come and go. It's really just me and Eric. I mean, I'm part of a few Discord groups that I never go into,
Okay.
But
All right. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I
I
mean,
guess
I
that
get.
would make sense of. Yeah. No, it's like the same when I was a kid making recording music and putting it out, I'd put it under band names and give it to my friends, That's actually where
Yeah.
Dakota Slim came from.
Yeah.
So I've always had the facade that there's a group, or like
Yeah.
other
Well, if you know.
people. I work with other people, but it's like, no, it's just my lonely ass in the dimming room here, pretty
Yeah.
much,
Well, it
with
can
Eric.
also represent, with Eric, it also represents the scene, though. You know what I mean? It can represent the scene. So if you feel like you're part of the scene at all, that's where that fits in, too. So.
That's interesting. So I think I'll have to investigate this more, but this was the I think we found the rub of the of a couple of them. But it's exciting. It's fascinating. How do you feel about folks, say in like let's say a Christian construct where they have, you know, born again, right? Or like these folks that can kind of, through other traditional means or not, you know, can kind of pick a new birthday and go for that. Do you see that as being a complete fabrication, or do you see that as kind of something like a chart or something to aspire to that they can actually kind of tune into and, you know, correlate into?
Yeah, I guess I would say the astrology for that day would probably be very pertinent. And then also, I know you're kind of asking like, does that cast a new chart for them kind of thing, right? Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never really thought about that. That's a really good question. You would have to ask some open-minded Christian people who are okay with astrology, you know. And back in the day, even like I was talking before, like Cecco Discoli in Italy in the 13th century, he was teaching astrology at the college, the University of Bologna, and mm-hmm. the Inquisition didn't roast him yet. They ended up roasting him later, but they didn't get him because it was seen that a benevolent God would leave clues to his plan for us to find. So they didn't have a problem with astrology even back then. So I would have to ask, you know, I would say you have to ask some open-minded Christian people what they think.
Okay. Yeah, I would, I'm interested. Yeah, because just kind of, I don't know, maybe in more of a psychological or therapeutic exercise of some sort where you were to kind of, you know, pick a day, a new birthday, say life is going really hard. And you're like, well, if, you know, I would want these attributes that I don't have, you know, creating a chart, picking a day that allows for those attributes as kind of a goalpost to, I don't know. It was just off the top of my head, but yeah, I think there's something there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it might collapse the whole system if you can just pick and choose. You can't really unmake yourself and remake yourself in that way, right? Instantly, just because you choose a day, you know, I think adults know that. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. I mean, I guess too, it would be like, I guess it's back to like the fictional characters or when you're creating characters, like giving them, you know, a chart in and of itself. That might help for method acting too. Who knows, you know? It's like, no, my character would never do that because he's a Leo rising, you know.
That's a deep method. Like, that's a deep method. I would be very impressed if they were that deep into it. That'd be cool.
That sounds like a skit, like a funny comedy skit. Daniel Day-Lewis went way too deep on this one. Oh, man.
Yeah, totally.
I'm wondering what else we can cover. It was, like, such a wonderful brash. We should do this semi-regularly and talk more, you know, about forecasting. I think what excites me moving forward, and I hope that people can kind of take away from this, is, you know, the preparedness of like a psychical preparedness for not being so surprised when everything goes to shit, and not necessarily giving something to blame. I don't believe in, you know, theology to blame something. I don't believe in entities or the other to blame something. I think, you know, it's all in congress, it's all in concert. Like, this is a communion, it's a relationship to all of these things. So, like, maybe here's a forecast of the moodiness of, you know, these relationships that we have with the outside and with each other and all of this. I'd love to do at least a follow-up on, you said the next big transit is all the way through the 2026.
It's going to start in the like the first day of September and go for like 10 or 12 weeks, and then Pluto's going to go direct in Capricorn and move back into Aquarius. So It's going to be wild. I think we all know it's going to be wild. I don't follow politics. I don't play sides on that shit. I think it's the puppet show of humanity. But regardless of what you think, like, we all know it's going to get pretty wild out there. So,
you know, it's funny. It's almost absolutely absurd and wild that it's like non-plussedness, if that makes sense. Like, there is nothing exciting about who's running. No. It's nothing but just like disappointment ahead.
I think it's always like that. Yeah, I've never given a shit, and I don't think I ever. I've never voted, dude. So like, I don't care to that level. But it's going to be interesting for the rest of the, you know, the United States specifically, to see what happens and, you know, what, how, you know, that's another thing too. They predicted the rise of AI with Pluto moving into Aquarius, which it did pretty much on the date, because, you know, Aquarius is like human innovations and technology and air transfer. So even though it's Aquarius, it sounds like a water sign, it's actually an air sign. So that's why that makes a lot of sense. So they were predicting this rise of, you know, ChatGPT, all this crazy stuff, and it happened. So
yeah, leave it to Aquarians for AI. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, not my batch of favorite bunch. No, I'm just kidding. My roommate's in Aquarius. I love him. He's great. But it's interesting, but yeah, man.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just gonna say it's interesting. We're talking about timing. It's all about timing with astrology, right? You know, and like the fact that you and I, and, you know, even Derek linked up and we were all talking and getting into that thing, you know, I find it very synchronous too, to what's going on, not just in my chart. I don't want to relate everything back to my chart. You know, I love that and it's cool, but it's like, I also, you know, like my thing's magic. My thing isn't, you know, astrology is awesome. Somehow I became court astrologer. I became celestial seer, and I will wear the title proudly, and I will execute my duties. But
yeah.
My thing
you
is
also change your title or do something else too. That's how good I am with groups. I'm just like,
I love it and I appreciate it. But what I'll say too is, you know, magic is my focus more than astrology. I learned astrology to be able to better perform magic and actually get results. And, you know, that's why I do it, is not because of just wanting to track the stars. It's very practical and it's a very cool thing, and it's helped me a lot, and I hope it helps everybody else. But, you know, magic has been my thing for a long time, and I'm trying to get good at it. I'm trying to become, and I'm also trying to take an approach to it that's well thought out, that also doesn't really, kind of like you, doesn't sway to one side, doesn't follow one camp specifically. You know, we connected on Kenneth Grant. I love Kenneth Grant so much, you know, like that's something I'd love to have you on my show and talk about one day is Kenneth Grant. But
what's funny is I think we last talked with Derek on his birthday, right? Didn't we talk on the 23rd? And I think we were talking about him. Maybe. For some reason, my mind, I didn't like connect that was happening. Something synchronous.
Yeah, totally. The thing that's weird is all those things start to bleed into each other, you know, and that's, synchronicity has been turned on high lately, at least for me in my local circle. I don't know if anybody else has been witnessing that, but, you know, synchronicity has been very high. And going back to what I was saying before, though, looking at the different stuff, you know, looking at, you know, the Kenneth Grant stuff, looking at Thelema, looking at chaos magic, looking at every single facet of the occult, and then finding what ties them together. What are the pieces here, like, If you buy into one, you're indoctrinated. But if you see the similarities and you can put a picture together that's more accurate of what really is happening, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, that's what my studies have led to. So, you know, that's why, you know, even what you're doing is kind of this interesting brand of, I don't know what it is. So trying to find out what is there, that it's awesome. I'm giving it a compliment. It's great. You know, and I think trying to find out through all these different systems, what is the common core things that permeate through all of them, you get a closer picture of reality. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. What are the constants, or like the constructs through them all that, you know, kind of build like a personage of belief or thought or practice or all of that. You know, people have done it before me and people will continue to do it better than me or whatever, but I think with the Divergent Magic Grimoire, it was like, you know, if we can start thinking of these things less in hierarchical, kind of dogmatic, kind of you're not in the group kind of constructs, right? Of esoteric learning or seeking or even playing. Like here's basically a schema for like, fuck them, make your own, you know? And sure. I know, like, and I don't mean that, and I do mean that, you know what I mean? Sure. And I think, like, yeah, what I keep coming back down to is, you know, this, yeah, this communion or this relationship, this sort of, I don't know, this, it's linguistic, right? It's a language, like everything's a language, and how we relate with our fingers to our, you know, vocal cords, like to vibrations, to, you know, the inner, the outer, whatever. It's like, it's all these different lexicons kind of running into each other. These words smashing and like transmorphing into things. And it's like, well, you know, how do we kind of delineate the pathways and the patchworking so that we don't have to succumb to the fates of Western astrology, you know, like we don't have to succumb to the fates of this or that. Perhaps there's more choice in creating or customizing a truly fulfilled kind of existence in this temporal meat suit that we have been bestowed, you know. And yeah, I keep coming and I make a joke about, you know, the fates of Western astrology, but that's kind of baked into it, as you were saying. There's something about needing it to fill in the linguistics or like the lexicon of the whole, for sure. Correspondences, transits, choreography in magical ritual. You know, the Ezra Sanser Bell, who wrote Astro Music and Audiomancy, the books that I quote often, like the tonality of astrological correspondences, the music of the spheres, right? These are all things that are like combined and tethered. It would be bullheaded, blinders on nonsense to burrow through any of these studies and not give a second thought to astrological or cosmic rhythms, right? It would be crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's like so
fundamental.
It's just so fundamental. But you know, moving past my gripes with my own birth time and my different studies and dalliances between Vedic or sidereal or Western, I think, yeah, what it comes down to it is that it's quite a wonderful thing to gain insight on things that you basically don't have a voice for yet. Mm-hmm. I know not to be reactionary about being misunderstood so much, or I have that kind of epithet, right, constructed now about that part of me because of this study. And, you know, that's just a small kind of gift it has bestowed on me and how I correlate this somatic reality or whatever. But mm-hmm. Yeah. And you coming in right at that time when it was popping up, and sometimes, you know, when shit happens, whether it's supremely good, the synchronicities, like whether they're incredible or they're absolutely like life shattering, like something's going on here, you know, it's like, of course your ears perk up. Your, I don't know, psychic ears.
Yeah.
You know, the hair on the back, that whisper in the back of your neck. I mean, that shit, something's going on. And I think this past month with everything, it was very soothing to hear when studying the charts and the transits. It was soothing to know I should have braced for impact during this time. Does it mean that? It probably would have meant that I would have changed how I went about things, maybe if I had it in the back of my mind. Like, and I think that's the quandary and that's the fun of it, is once you can start to, you know, forecast, you'll start to see how it infects. I hate to use that word. It sounds nasty, but I mean it positively. How it infects, like, how you attune to the world. Like, not knowing that the Saturn return is coming is going to be a surprise, but it's going to happen either way, right? Knowing it's coming, it might change the course of the next 3 years of my life because I know that, you know, that's happening. So yeah, super fascinating.
Yeah, indeed. I'm glad that in that time you needed that, you know, we were able to talk about it and was able to give you some navigation for those moments, you know, because I know those were big things going on with you. You know, I know you have big changes going on in your life in the background. And I think that having some sort of framework to work within helps a lot. It gives you, like, you can breathe a little bit more. You know, it's not all on you 100%. It is on you 100%, but it's not. There are other things at work, is my point. You know, there are other things at work that you're dealing with. Just like if you were going through a storm, you're going to have to deal with the actual rain and the wind and things like that. And it's not your fault if your car slides necessarily. It's because there was rain, dude. You know what I mean? So,
right. But you would drive with more
caution. Yeah.
Caution, knowing that a rainstorm is coming for sure. And I mean, I know we're not, like, you know, revealing or being revelatory, and I think people that know me or know this show for a long time, I haven't really addressed dead on, like, astrology. It's always been a part of different things, and I've talked about Mayan astrology. I've talked about more, like, esoteric kind of ones, but I think, you know, I'm at a point, I'm almost at 100 episodes, and it was kind of time to kind of wrestle it with it and be open with, like, you know, my history with it and why I find it annoying. And that's not astrology's fault most of the time, you know, but it's also, yeah, like, you coming in at that time was like, holy shit, this guy, you know, he knows the rhythms, he knows the cosmic rhythms. And I mean, knows by, like, I mean that in the biblical sense, like, you've lain with the cosmic rhythms, you know what I mean? Capital K.
I definitely have done that. You know, and yeah, that's the point I wanted to make. I think overall with the astrology stuff is, if you're into the occult or the metaphysical at all, starting there or exploring astrology gives you a very solid understanding of the reality of occult phenomenon. We can sit here and discuss, is astrology real? Is any of this shit real? Does it really fucking matter? Blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, if you're into this, you know, I think if you're into the occult at all, and that's just everything, astrology, magic, all that stuff. If you're into that at all, it's because you've experienced something with the other. You've experienced that. Otherwise, it's just playtime. It's just, oh, I'm a wizard, look at me. But those people are inconsequential. It's the people who have seen something and felt something and experienced something that's like, yeah, there's not really a solid material explanation for that. And I've done my thinking, is that confirmation bias? Is that me just seeing, you know, something out of the corner of my eye and making it to be something that it wasn't? And if you've already done that self-check and you're still like, no, that happened and that was not something that should happen according to the current model of reality, you know, astrology is, you're one of those people who gets into the occult, and astrology is a great way to ground yourself and to find that there are cycles outside of your control that are influencing you. They're just influences, man. They're just influences. I don't think that you're inclined or compelled to do something, but knowing them, knowing the weather is a big deal. You know, it's a huge deal and it can help so many people. And I think that you say commune with the other. And I love that. I think that that's a really good way to, it's a good, description of magic, one of the many good descriptions of magic, you know. And
it's a good old-fashioned hoedown, you know.
Yeah, and the other is so many different things, but in the end it is something that isn't you. It's transcendent in so many ways. It goes beyond us, it goes beyond human beings, it goes beyond these things. And when you touch that thing and you oh shit, that's there, and like, oh man, like, you'll try to rationalize it away. But once you kind of, like, you know, there's an intuitive knowing, can't be measured by science, but I don't give a fuck about that. Like, that's more real to me than most things, you know. Like, it's a sense that we haven't learned to measure yet. So knowing those things is huge. It's gigantic for someone's growth and development, providing the framework through astrology, but magic being a practice that I have been obsessed with for a long time. And I think being able to combine the two, and being able to really work in tandem with those rhythms, like you were saying, to commune with the other, is only going to help give you a bigger picture of where you sit and also show you how your work is being, it's hard to really describe, you know, but it's going to change your view of yourself in the universe. Like, oh, I have a little bit of power here. If I sync with these things, now I can actually it's a pendulum. And when you decide to ride the pendulum, all the power of the pendulum is with you. You can swing with it rather than fighting against it. And that's kind of what you're doing. Magicians have always looked at the natural laws that aren't immediately in front of your face and been like, how do I work with those? And that's kind of
Right.
what we're doing.
Yeah, the truth bearer, truth maker, constructs of like metaphysical grounding. I always think about, but that's a whole thing. But I was gonna say, folks can visit you at transplutonic.com. I'm gonna share a screen here and put it in the chat. Let's talk real quick about transplutonic. What you do, the many different projects within it, because it's not just, you do have a Substack, which is great. I loved your first piece. We didn't get much into the rock and roll aspects of stuff, but we'll do this again for sure.
I mean, we could still touch on it lightly if you'd like. But yeah, man, I think that's really what I'm about is magic and rock and roll. I remember saying once I wanted to be the rock and roll Jack Parsons instead of the jet propulsion Jack Parsons. So it's a tall order to fill, but I would love to do that one day, be that. And Transplutonic is just where you find me. It's just all my outlets. It's about my music stuff. It's about my blog. I'm going to start my own podcast. That's coming up soon. Keats has really inspired that. So thank you, man. Like, you've really kind of got a fire under my ass. Seeing how much work you put in constantly and how adept you are at doing all those things has really, really got me into that. So I'm excited to, keep pushing these projects forward and be a part of this community. I'm really grateful for that. And anybody who's, part of this community who watches this, or new viewers in general, like, you're onto something cool here when you come across this. So I'm grateful for it.
Oh yeah, man. No, I mean it's been a tit for tat thing for sure. I put you in the comments here. I don't know why I didn't hyperlink. Let's try that again. Also, it's in the show notes for those that are wondering. I will say that another project that we're kind of slowly working on is because of this kind of shared interest in this kind of schema of ingesting. The Divergent Magic Grimoire. Let me reverse that. My brain is all over the place. With the astrological aspect and injecting that into the schema of the Divergent Magic Grimoire, Leo has been instrumental in helping delineate those tethers, those kind of those shared, not to use the word again, but correspondences between the different prisms of astrology, breaking it down to how it can be useful to not only jot the choreography of the self as it relates, cosmically, but to also help one learn and move with and dance and hoedown with astrology as part of their daily magical practice. And I'm really excited for that. That'll be in the new edition of the Divergent Magic Grimoire, which is kind of still a ways out. And there's a lot of background stuff about that. But for those of you that would like a Divergent Magic Grimoire, or interested in it, maybe you're hard up for money right now, please email me pragmagic@gmail.com. I'd rather you have one than didn't. Unless you would like to purchase one from Amazon, which I do have both the hardback and the paperback on Amazon, and that's been great. Leo's been a part of the group. We do a monthly group. We call it a rite share. Anyone who owns a Divergent Magic Grimoire is automatically inducted into the Damager group or the DMGer group, and that is a monthly kind of Zoom StreamYard situation, and we talk about ways to use the Divergent Magic Grimoire, how people are using it. We share each other's rituals, we share each other's struggles. I'm there to help lessen the mystique or the goof juice around some of the language that's in there, answer questions, and help folks get in on creating their own kind of anarchic praxis. So that's on Amazon. Of course, you can find all of the Divergent Magic stuff, links. We the Hollow just put out merch. I'm not going to do this whole plug thing, but you can just go to pragmagic.com. I know it's been a while since I have been around doing the podcast thing, and I've been working on an album. I'm playing in Portland this weekend on Sunday at No Fun. For those of you in the Portland area, it'll be under Rebel Raj, which is whose album I've been working on for so long that I'm going through bouts of reconstructing and remaking. It's either 60% done or it's 0% done right now. So, or I'll release some of the songs, or, you know, I'll throw everything away. I don't know. We'll find out. But no, some of the songs will come out soon. So there's that. And of course, working on Haunt Manual's print edition, which is a motherload of work ahead of me with that stuff. And I say this to say, it's not that I've been gone. It's that I've been busy, and not busy with the great things all the time. And I have missed doing this. I'd love to chat with more people. I think there was a time in the past few months where I didn't need tit for tats back and forth. I didn't need any kind of inspiration from other people. I kind of had, my head was about to explode, and I just needed to be in a room and to do a bunch of stuff for a while. And that's an issue too, of kind of over, how do I put it? It's like an abundance issue of, or an, maybe it's an addiction issue where I will kind of obsess about something really hard for a while, and then that will just kind of overtake. And sadly, it's made me a shut-in, a bit introverted, and kind of crazy with the cheese whiz when it comes with the artistic projects. And I've just, thanks to folks like Leo and Derek and some others, really excited to get back to this and needing this kind of outlet to kind of, you know, share and discuss, because otherwise the cabin fever is real, folks. You know, cabin fever, I was Jack Nicholson in The Shining for the past 3 months, probably. That's the beard and the eyebrows. But but yeah, so it's been a while. I'm glad to be back, and really appreciated Leo being here for kind of the re-entry into this this project, this Pragmagic project. So expect more chats, and really not really anything. Don't really anything. How's that? But anyways, yeah, please check out transplutonic.com. Leo's on Instagram, Transplutonic Drums.
Yep.
I think I can find his and share in the chat here. Yeah, give him a follow. He does amazing work behind his drum throne. I hope to be working with him musically soon.
Oh, and, I'm excited. I'm excited.
Yeah, a lot going on. I feel like I was just on a sermon there. There was like months of catching up I had to do, but yeah. I apologize.
No,
but yeah, you'll see me and Leo again very, very soon. Big things in the pipeline. Leo, you have any kind of parting audible gifts for the world?
I will say thank you again to Keats and everybody who I've met through Pragmagic and knowing all these people, which is, I'm starting to meet more people, and I'm kind of isolated here. You know, yeah. There aren't many people who know, who are into the same stuff. So I really am grateful for that. So I'll say that, and come check me out on Instagram and tell me how terrible I am, or that you could play better than me, 'cause I would love that. And I want to get schooled. I need that. And I just thank you to everybody. And I hope we get to do more of this next time. I want to talk about magic and rock and roll. That's my thing, man. Astrology is awesome, and this was a perfectly timed chat for that. But next time I want to dig into the real meat of kind of what I really think you and I connect on even more than astrology, yeah. Which are those two things, you know?
Yeah, I will leave it to that maybe we'll do part two here then soon, maybe in the next week or so, to do that. Cool. Because yeah, those are my two favorite things in the world. It's surprising to me that we didn't get to it in close to 2 hours, but Yeah, that's just how it goes when you're having fun. And I really appreciated this one too. I think there's a lot of there was a lot of discussion about like the applications and the kind of helpful somatic things folks can utilize. And you know, don't get me wrong, I'm wooed up the wazoo, but I really enjoy that aspect of a kind of aid when it comes to these high-minded ethereal topics, you know. So no, it was great, but yeah, let's do it. We'll book it tonight. We'll be back for straight up just magic rock and roll. We'll leave the planets at home and we'll everything from, you know, Link Ray to who's a modern. I love my rock and rolls like up to maybe mid-90s.
Rock and roll is the spirit, man. That's all in.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So we're gonna do it. I think it's gonna be sick.
Yeah, and rock and roll is alive and well. All right, big love to everybody. Haunt on.